This is the Wild Clearwater Country Show, the last show of the year. So, talk a little bit about the show today. It's going to be a little bit about a year in review. Talk about some of the high points and low points here in the Wild Clearwater Country and some of the more fun events and more interesting things that have happened here. But in that spirit, I thought we're going to have some fun music today. I thought we'd start off with a song by Robert Hoyt, kind of a funny tune. I have to tell a little story about this song. I remember sitting in a courtroom with all these very rich attorneys back in the old Cove Mallard, the infamous Cove Mallard timber sale days, when some people who had exercised their First Amendment rights were standing around trying to blockade a road, and they got arrested logging in some wild country, central Idaho. But this song was playing in front of the courtroom as evidence against the people, the defendants on trial there, about how, I guess maybe how impolite and bad they were, because Robert Hoyt was singing the song, although he was not arrested at all in that. He was singing this little song, "I Hate Money," at the same time, while all these high-priced attorneys were being paid by the federal government, since none of the people had money on which to pay attorneys. So it was a rather humorous event, a little bit of irony there. So we're going to start off today's show with "I Hate Money" here by Robert Hoyt.
I hate money. I hate the smell of cash. I hate money, we've all got our little stash. I hate money, it's the most addictive stuff. No matter how much you have, it's never enough. I hate money, money killed my brother. I hate money, it's killing my mother. I hate it, look what it's done to you and me. It's not just the root, it's the whole damn tree. I hate money, it's that carrot on a stick. I hate money as I turn another trick. I hate to think that they would take away mine. And that's all it takes to keep me in line. I hate money, money killed my brother. I hate money, it's killing my mother. I hate it, but what it's done to you and me. It's not just the root, it's the whole damn tree. So what if we treated it like the trash that it is? Refuse to use it to pay for our goods and services. Then this thing money become a thing of the past. A nanny left around it could use to wipe your brow. I hate money, money killed my brother. I hate money, it's killing my mother. I hate it, look what it's done to you and me. It's not just the root, it's the whole damn tree. And I hate that analogy. I hate money, money killed my brother. I hate money, it's killing my mother. I hate it, look what it's done to you and me. You know I hate it, yeah, I hate money.
A little bit of Robert Hoyt here on the Wild Clearwater Country Show with the song I Hate Money. Funny little story behind that. We might hear from Robert a little bit later in the show. To start off, I thought I would do a little bit about the year in review. Kind of some of the successes for the Wild Clearwater Country and some of the challenges that still remain. Well, let's start looking at some of these successes here. I don't think any success would be complete without mentioning something that actually happened at the end of 2005, but had big spillover into 2006. It's still sort of ongoing. Nez Perce Tribe challenged a timber sale, a very ill-advised timber sale called the North Loxaw Face Sale, a huge sale right in some wild country surrounding Fish and Hungry Creeks and other tributaries. The Forest Service finally backed off a little bit and decided not to log any formally identified roadless areas. But there's still a lot of logging of older trees and whatnot in this timber sale, and a lot of damage to the watershed. Nez Perce Tribe was successful in that lawsuit. And in this past year, I guess they've had discussions with the Forest Service to see what happens next. They won. Great wild tract of the Clearwater Country was saved. So one of the good events of this past year, the Nez Perce Tribe's ongoing discussions and victory on the North Loxaw Face timber sale proposed by the Clearwater National Forest. Good job to those folks. Great job on behalf of the Wild Clearwater Country. Well, another good success, citizens, and it means all different groups, including the aforementioned Nez Perce Tribe, have been successful in turning back any proposals for logging and road building in roadless areas on the Clearwater Nez Perce National Forest and the portions of the Idaho Panhandle National Forest that are unroaded within the Clearwater Basin. Some good victories there. And in fact, it's extended to include even the Bureau of Land Management, although there's a proposal out there by BLM to log in some land adjacent to roadless country on the National Forest. It's still awaiting a decision. It's sitting out there. Public comment was taken on that. We may have mentioned it on the show. It's called the Eastside Township Timber Sale, a massive project that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So there we go. A good success there in keeping the agencies from destroying wild country. Well, I think this was a major victory of 2006. This next one. But it still has yet to be played out because there are many parts to it. state of Idaho came up with a proposal. They wanted to kill up to 75% of the wolves in part of the Upper Clearwater Basin. Well, this proposal, as those of you who have listened to this show know, really didn't have a scientific basis. In fact, the scientific data suggested that elk declines were not a function of predators at all, but rather more what would be considered density-dependent or factors, meaning available vegetation for forage and some other things, more habitat considerations. And these elk declines, from yours truly, who's done a little bit in terms of range ecology, looking at these areas out there, I sort of think they're probably a good thing. The watershed probably needs a little bit of a rest there. Most of the elk range in the Upper Clearwater especially used to be forested, and it's places that have been burned. And fire is a frequent visitor to the Clearwater, but the plants go through a successional stage and usually end up back in forests in a lot of this country, most of this country. Well, apparently people weren't happy with fewer elk, although elk numbers probably today are higher than they were time of Lewis and Clark. They wanted to blame wolves, blame predators, and so this proposal from the state of Idaho. And it was turned down by the Fish and Wildlife Service, but there are a couple of side tangents on this whole topic that people ought to be aware of. And it's this, the first one. The state hasn't given up. They've finally convinced the federal government. And I wonder how they did that. Could it be? Could it be that former governor of Idaho, Dirk Kempthorne, is now the Secretary of Interior, which is the department that oversees the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service? I'm wondering if that could be the reason. It could be a political reason. Well, it's probably absolutely the case. So the Fish and Wildlife Service is now ready, in spite of not living up to their promise to the citizens of this country, breaking their promise, disobeying the law, and going to delist the wolves in Montana and Idaho without first having an appropriate plan from the state of Wyoming. Now, people need to recognize that the criteria for delisting have been changing. It's been a shifting set. Rather than, again, live up to the commitments and promises, living up to their word, and having any sort of integrity, the Fish and Wildlife Service has gone and changed this. In particular, the northwestern recovery area in Montana, which also includes Idaho north of Interstate 90, that area has not met the recovery goals of 10 reproducing pairs, 10 packs of wolves with reproducing wolves for, I believe, 3 years in a row. At least according to the latest data, hasn't met that. The Fish and Wildlife Service a few years ago said, well, we don't need to do that as long as we have enough wolves in other parts of Idaho or Wyoming or Montana, in spite of their very clear promise. They wanted these wolf packs distributed throughout the country and probably playing their ecological role. So we've got a delisting proposal now coming in front of the citizens of this country, and we should expect to see something released soon for public comment. When it is, we will certainly make you aware of that here on the Wild Clearwater Country Show and ways that you can become involved. Also, some people who don't like wolves in the state, some anti-wolf folks, people that really aren't concerned about wildlife, more I would call them game farmers, they're going to hold a little rally sometime down the state capitol, I guess early next month. They want to petition the federal government to delist the species. Well, amazingly, they're already going through that process, so I kind of begs the question why they're still holding the rally. They got the political fixes in with Dirk back in the Department of Interior and this administration. But I think the judicial branch may still have something to say about these proposals. So we'll see where that takes us. The other factor, though, people ought to be aware of in this whole wolf issue, is that wolves were being stewarded or managed, if you will, very well in this part of the state by the Nez Perce tribe. They seem to now be out of the equation mostly because the state of Idaho, who wants to take over wolf management, the Nez Perce tribe has done a commendable job under the circumstances, given the oversight from the federal government, the conflicting changes from administration to administration. And they've done quite a very good job, and they have expertise in wolf issues. And they're trying to turn it now over to the state of Idaho, who said, yeah, well, maybe we'll have a memorandum of understanding with the Nez Perce tribe and maybe let them consult with us. But that's probably not good enough, I don't think. You need to do something more. State of Idaho, in fact, wolves are delisted. And in fact, I would suggest that wolves in the treaty area of the Nez Perce people need to be managed by the Nez Perce tribe and not the state of Idaho. How about that? And that dates back to the Treaty of 1855, not just 1863. It would be the suggestion there. But we'll see where that issue goes. Again, an entity with a proven track record and concern about ecological integrity of our systems. And Nez Perce tribe is being sort of shoved out of this process by the state of Idaho, who has not demonstrated concern at all for the ecological role of wolves in the system. But at least it was a victory in 2006 that the state's proposal was found to be the scientific fraud that it was and still is. A couple other, though, very interesting notes and victories. Conservationists won an appeal of the very ill-advised cherry dinner timber sale in the Potlatch River drainage of the Clearwater National Forest. And that appeal was filed by Friends of the Clearwater, I believe the Wild West Institute, and the Lands Council, and Idaho Sporting Congress. So quite an important victory there. The Palouse Group of the Sierra Club and Friends of the Clearwater joined together under the leadership of the Sierra Club to close trails in Grandmother Mountain to all-terrain vehicles. There are a lot of problems up there. The Forest Service was finally convinced that they needed to take emergency action, and they did close some of the trails there. Again, that was previously announced on the show. An important victory. Well, in light of these past couple of victories, I think we'll play a little song now from Mike Bader. He's a pretty interesting blues musician out of Missoula, Montana. Also, I believe the first executive director and one of the co-founders, if I'm not mistaken, of the Alliance for the Wild Rockies. Former Park Service employee, a grizzly bear expert, but also a pretty good blues musician. And this is kind of a humorous tune called Clear Cut Case of the Blues. Thank you.
We got homeless on the street. Ice caps are melting, and the food's not safe to eat. Treat your world with disrespect. Don't think there ain't no pain to do. A clear-cut case of the blues.
Cupcakes
of the blues. clear-cut case of the blues.
A little bit of Mike Bader there, clear-cut case of the blues. So yes, talking about planet Earth. And it was actually dedicated, I believe, to the old Cedars in the Wild Clearwater Country. Last time I heard him live, that's what he said anyway. All right, back to our show. And sort of this year in review. Some of the fun things, some of the weird, and some of the more interesting things that have happened. And some of the successes. I've been talking about some of the successes. A very interesting success happened not that long ago. Earth Justice represented several organizations, including local Friends of the Clearwater, in an important legal victory for this rare wild critter that inhabits the Clearwater Country, the wolverine. I believe it's the largest land-dwelling member of the weasel family. I don't know if we consider the otter a land-dwelling and the sea otter necessarily, because they spend a lot of their time in water, but it's a terrestrial one. It's the largest in that family in terms of weight. It's probably the largest in terms of just overall size, even larger than an otter when you look at the actual dimensions of the creature. But otters have all that extra padding and stuffing there to keep them warm in those cold, cold oceans and rivers during the wintertime. Wolverine, a very pugnacious creature, very rare. In fact, maybe even rarer than the grizzlies in the lower 48. But the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service must yet again consider the information presented by several conservation organizations to determine whether or not this species should be listed under the Endangered Species Act. Another success, I think, was many local conservationists joined together across state lines, across the country, in an effort to say no to legislation that proposed Faustian bargains that would, while perhaps protecting some areas as wilderness, gave away or sold other public lands, and in the process also produced weakening amendments to the Wilderness Act, which made some of those areas less than other wilderness areas, not perhaps real wilderness. That was pretty successful here at the very end of Congress. There were four bills that were considered perhaps the worst of these, and only one of the four got through, and that was one in Nevada. And a very important victory there. Citizens have been getting out in the wild Clearwater Country. You've probably heard some of the reports about different surveys. There's a survey going on for the Coeur d'Alene salamander, and I think that project will be continuing next year, kind of a cooperative project between Friends of the Clearwater and other organizations, including, I believe, the U.S. Forest Service, Clearwater National Forest, and perhaps the Idaho Department of Fish and Game. But a couple of other things I thought I should mention as perhaps victories. And I put them in this category. They really don't belong there, but I think these bear more watching. One of them is sort of a Trojan horse. And the other is, who knows? Let's talk about the Trojan horse first. Governor Risch of Idaho came out with a new proposal, which has been accepted by the Department of Agriculture. Now they have to go through a process to determine its validity. That would protect not all of Idaho's National Forest wilderness areas, but many of them. Still leave, though, over 500,000 acres unprotected and open for development. Not that good of a proposal. Not quite as good as the 2001 proposal, which wasn't perfect either. But what's most disturbing about this proposal is the de facto devolution of public land decision-making and involvement away from the public in general and all citizens of this country to localized citizens. National forests are owned by all Americans, whether they live in New Jersey, Oregon, Washington, or the state of Idaho. And these decisions are properly made in a national forum. And to allow certain states to have more say over what happens on public land than other citizens is goes against our democratic principles. So in spite of the fact that this proposal by Governor Risch was probably better than what many people expected, I think people ought to realize it for the Trojan horse that it is. The idea isn't to try to stymie, as many people have thought, any kind of roadless protection, because the courts have done a lot of that, and the hard work of many grassroots organizations and citizens have already done that for the most part. The idea is to try to take away management from citizens of this country and through their lawfully appointed entities and turn them into other entities for, and once that happens, then let's just see how long these roadless areas really will be protected. I think that's the real danger. But I stuck it there in this other category, in this kind of important categories, because it represents perhaps a change from what the state of Idaho had proposed in the past, at least if the language is indeed clarified from what it says. Of course, we have an integrity and a credibility problem here, but we'll see what the next year has to offer on that front. Also, another very interesting thing I thought that happened this past year were the elections. Nationally, it seems that the environment is now going to be better served. It still remains to be seen. The environment really shouldn't be a partisan issue. It has unfortunately become almost a nonpartisan issue in recent years, with, as a general rule, the Republican Party not being very hostile to the planet on which we live, ironically, and Democrats, although being somewhat less hostile, certainly not standing up. And that's been a sad situation. Maybe this election will change things. Maybe the reality that our planet is warming and that portends drastic changes and problems for humans, maybe that will help change things. But the elections, many people saw a ray of hope in that, and maybe that will still prove to be the case. I wouldn't hold my breath. And I would certainly hold our elected officials accountable, because they certainly should be. Well, I think we'll go back to another song here. An interesting song from Dana Lyons, who has a lot of humorous albums out there. I'll play a song off his Cows with Guns compilation. That's one of his older tunes, appeared on other albums, called TV God. Pretty funny little song about television. So here we go with some Dana Lyons. Make sure we've got it queued up correctly here.
Born, I went home to watch my TV. Everyone was nice and the smiles were so sparkly. I watched what made them happy and I watched what made them cry. I learned about toys and candy my mommy should buy. And the TV God watches over me, opens up my eyes, shows me how to see. All around the world, every night and day, on my TV. Teaches how to love, teaches what is real, tells what life is of, tells me how to feel. All I need to know, I can find and see on my TV. Soon I was a teenager and I knew just how to dress. I learned to use deodorant so I would always smell my best. I got myself a part-time job to buy the things I needed to have. And the payments on my supercharged Camaro really aren't so bad. And the TV God watches over me, opens up my eyes, shows me how to see. All around the world, every night and day, on my TV. Teaches teaches how to love, teaches what is real, tells what life is of, tells me how to feel. All I need to know, I can find and see on my TV.
Everybody be careful, everybody be very careful, keep watching your TV. There are people who are laughing with a wink or a nod. There are people who are questioning our great TV God. Everybody be careful, everybody be very careful, stay tuned to your TV. There are ponies who are talking, there are wasters who read. There are people here who do not even own a TV. Everybody be careful, oh everybody be careful. Oh, everybody be careful.
Everything I know about my country, I learned on TV. The man on the screen tells me who is our enemy. They say that we are free and we must fight to be number one. So when the army calls, I'll grab my TV, my car and my gun. And the TV God watches over me, opens up my eyes, shows me how to see. All around the world, every night and day, on my TV. Teaches how to love, teaches what is real, tells what life is of, tells me how to feel. All I need to know, I can find and see on my TV.
And we're back, the Wild Clearwater Country Show. That was Dana Lyons there. Rather humorous tune. Well, we're going to shift a little bit now into shift gears. Let's talk a little bit about some of the funnier events this past year. I've chosen two what I find rather humorous events. And I guess you could say these get the Whopper of the Year award. A couple of things that have happened, or maybe a collection of things that have happened. And while he probably deserves first place, this year's second place finisher in kind of the Whopper of the Year for saying one of the most humorous, ridiculous, stupidest and most idiotic things of the year goes to Mark Rae, Undersecretary of Agriculture, head of the Forest Service, former timber industry lobbyist, who suggested this past year that it was unfair for a group called Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility to suggest that threats against public land employees were coming from one direction, i.e. the resource exploitation industries. This organization documented what I would suggest is probably an unfortunate trend in increasing harassment and violence against public employees, or threats of more intimidation. And most of those seem to be coming from folks involved in extractive industries on public land, be they mining, ranching, logging, and whatnot, or people sympathetic with those viewpoints. Mark Rae suggested it was purely politics to say that, and that, in fact, violence or intimidation and harassment comes from people that are concerned about environmental protection as well against public employees. Well, I started to think about that, and I really can't think of any examples. I mean, you know, can you imagine your quote-unquote local tree hugger going up and threatening the Forest Service? You know, maybe, oh, yeah, we're going to sue you. We're going to take you to court. We're going to get a lot of people to write comments. Uh-huh, big threat. So Mark Rae, for being absolutely idiotic, he gets second place. But this year, and we're going to have a little drum roll here. There we go. This year, the undisputed champion of stupid statements, idiotic statements, and just plain wrong statements has to come from the state of Idaho, particularly the Idaho Fish and Game Commission, they're concerned about wanting to whack wolves. Their statements on, and this one actually came from the governor, the new governor, that wolves have to be thinned out, contrary to all the science. Wolves don't need to be thinned out. Again, big differences between different wildlife species and how they respond. That the state wanted to kill wolves and they were the problem in spite of all the science to the contrary. An ongoing struggle that's been reported on this show about wolves and how we treat wolves in the state of Idaho. The award for the Whopper of the Year has got to go again to the Idaho Department, the Idaho Fish and Game Department, I mean Fish and Game Commission, excuse me, and sort of subsidiarily to that, the Idaho Fish and Game Department and the governor and the other people in the state of Idaho, in an effort to prevent wolves from playing their ecological role, a necessary role for watershed and vegetation and plant health here in the wild Clearwater country, trying to prevent them from playing that role. So for that, the Whopper of the Year goes to, again, Idaho Fish and Game Commission for leading the charge in spite of science. And even when the Fish and Wildlife Service, says, no, this is not scientific. Of course, now they're trying to delist the wolves and wash their hands of the whole process, not wanting to be responsible, thanks to Kempe back in D.C. now. But the Idaho Fish and Game Commission and others involved with that certainly deserve the Whopper of the Year award. So there we go with sort of this year in review. I'm going to come back here. We're going to play a little bit of music, come back with some other comments about the year. I thought we'd switch over here and play another tune from Robert Hoyt. Kind of a funny little song about traffic. It's called Stop Go. So here's a little Robert Hoyt tune on the Wild Clearwater Country Show.
Well, remember those traditional women's careers that kept them separate from the male peers, like teacher, secretary, nurse. And now there's one more that's worse, and it's stop, go, stop, slow. She can change direction of the traffic flow. She's the flag person on a road construction crew. Stop, go, stop, slow. Why don't they ever let her run the backhoe or lean on a shovel like the men workers do? Well, she's so cool, the way she's dressed in a hard hat and an orange vest. She's got a nation to fave, so obey her signal, don't forget to wave. Stop, go, stop, slow. She can change direction of the traffic flow. She's the flag person on the road construction crew. Stop, go, stop, slow. Why don't they ever let her run the backhoe or lean on the shovel like the men workers do? Could offer her a glass of lemonade, hold a big umbrella, give her some shade. What can you do to help see her clear of the asphalt ceiling in her career? Stop, go, stop, slow. She can change direction of the traffic flow. She's the flag person on a road construction crew. Stop, go, stop, slow. Why don't they ever let her run the backhoe or lean on a shovel like the man workers do?
John Svensson was a farmer. He grew the Minnesota wheat. Rode there with his daughter, high up on the thresher's seat. They broke down on the hillside, the radiator spitting steam. Went back to get the toolbox so they could fix the old machine. With a turn of the wrench and a twist of the screw, we can fix the tractor, we can make it like new. But that day they got a letter that said the power lines would come right across their farmland, right across the setting sun. So they gathered all the family and talked late into the night. We cannot let them do this. We've got to put up one hell of a fight. With a turn of the wrench and a twist of the screw, we'll apply a little pressure and we'll see what that will do. So they phoned 100 farmers and drove to the Twin Cities. Met there with the governor and they sued the utility. But after writing all the letters and paying all the legal costs to the power of the city, once again the farmers lost. And in the still of the evening, the wind is all you hear. I watch the waves on the wheat fields alone. I walk the furrows of earth I plant year after year. This is our land, this is our home. This is our land, this is our home. So they met there at the tavern, but there wasn't much to say. The power lines may come, but they will not stay. With the turn of the wrench and a twist of the screw, what was once put together we can easily undo. With bandanas on their faces, careful not to make a sound, they loosened all the bolts that held the towers to the ground. And several weeks later, nobody around, the Minnesota wind blew tower after tower after tower down. With the turn of the wrench and a twist of the screw, what was once put together we can easily undo. With the turn of the wrench and a twist of, what was once put together we can easily undo. And in the still of the evening, the wind is all you hear. I watch the waves on the wheat fields alone. I walk the furrows of year after year. This is our land, this is our home. This is our land, this is our home. This is our land, this is our home.